If you've enjoyed listening to Issues Etc. this year, please consider making a year-end tax-deductible donation to support this worldwide outreach. You can contribute by check, make your check payable to Issues Etc., and send it to Issues Etc., Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also make a year-end tax-deductible gift online at issuesetc.org. Thanks for listening, and thanks for keeping us in mind when you consider your year-end giving. We often talk here on Issues Etc. about how when the media covers religion, it doesn't always recognize a religion angle to a story. When it recognizes it, sometimes, well, quite often doesn't get the facts right. And sometimes there are those lingering angles of religion that are just mystify the reader when they read big stories and they say, why aren't they talking about this from a religion perspective? In fact, one of the top stories named by religion writers for 2014, the top story, in fact, the story of the Islamic State, often that is covered with only a cursory glance at the religious aspects of it, especially the religious aspirations of the Islamic State. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. on this Monday afternoon, December the 29th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to spend this hour discussing the top religion stories of 2014 with Terry Mattingly. Then we're going to study the Christmas hymn, All My Heart This Night Rejoices. Pastor Peter Bender of the Concordia Catechetical Academy will be our guest. Joining us to talk about the top religion stories of 2014, Terry Mattingly, director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Good to talk to you again.
Did you see that disconnect that we so often discuss here between the newsroom and religion stories reflected? Is it often reflected in these end-of-year lists of top stories?
You may be surprised to know that I'm going to say that it's not. Well, maybe it is and it isn't. But let's take the more interesting angle first, which is the fact that it's not. The disconnect is not shown in these sorts of polls for the simple reason that sometimes stories are so big you simply can't ignore them. Years and years ago, back when I was a baby little religion writer, in like 1978 or 79, I had an interesting conversation with the late George Cornell. Cornell's job was to be the religion writer for the Associated Press. And stop and think about that for a second, that he was the religion writer for planet Earth. Now, how would you like that job?
Wow.
In terms of being overwhelmed. Now, of course, everybody knew there'd be an entire bureau at the Vatican because the Vatican isn't really religion. It's too important to be religion. So it needs a bureau when you cover it like it's a country or something like that. But he was the religion writer for planet Earth. And George used to do something interesting. And as long as I knew him, he died 10, 15 years ago. George, every year, used to look at the Associated Press top 10 stories of the year. This is not religion. This is stories, period. And George said that in his entire multi-decade career, 30 years plus, whatever, is writing for the Associated Press, he said it was extremely rare to see a year in which at least five, if not more, of the major news stories of the year on planet Earth weren't religion stories or didn't have a religion angle so prominent that you couldn't ignore it, which I think is a really interesting comment and kind of fits with the whole Get Religion motto, which is that if you're going to cover real news in the lives of real people living in the real world, you have to take religion seriously. So sometimes stories get so big that you have to cover them. Now, does that mean the religion angle of the story is covered correctly or covered adequately? Not really. The event that George always used to talk about was, you remember Jonestown? I don't know how old you were when Jonestown occurred. or even if you had been born when Jonestown occurred. But anyway, you had that death of all the people who drank the Kool-Aid, as the old saying goes. And it went for a long, long time before you suddenly realized that Jonestown was actually a community linked to a liberal mainline Protestant mainstream denomination, which was Disciples of Christ, Church of Christ, or the United Church of Christ. It was United Church of Christ, Disciples of Christ. That's the combination. But anyway, George and several other religion writers, years ago when I was working on my graduate work at the University of Illinois in Urbana, they all noted that they didn't know of a single religion writer who was allowed to take part in coverage of Jonestown. And that would fit with this whole category that sometimes a story is so important that it can't be religion, even if it's about a religious community or a religious pastor or whatever. So with that in mind, we can look at this year's list of the stories. I mean, what's the most important story on planet Earth probably over the last year? Well, I would argue that that is the rise of the Islamic State. And I predict when the AP comes out for the year, there's a very good chance that the number one story of any kind on the planet last year will be the Islamic State and what it's done to the Middle East, what it's done to American foreign policy, et cetera, et cetera. The question is, will anybody actually stop and focus much attention on the religion angles of the Islamic State, which you think would be pretty howlingly obvious? I mean, such as the destruction of ancient Christian communities, the treatment of other religious minorities in the region, and also the tensions that the Islamic State represents inside Islam itself. You know, as a virulent form of Sunni Islam and its conflicts with Shia Islam and its attempts to regain a foothold in that part of the world. There's a theory out there which is popular on both the left and the right, and I like to say when you read something in the Weekly Standard and you read it in like the Nation the same week on the far left and the right, there must be something to it. And there were articles pointing out that the Islamic State is simply rising among Sunni tribes of Islam in the exact region of their tribal lands that were pretty much taken away from them by the British and everybody else when the line was drawn between Syria and Iraq without taking the tribes into effect. The British Foreign Service and foreign diplomacy, the diplomats, et cetera, are very much like American diplomats, and they don't think religion matters that much. So why would you need to take religion into account when you draw the borders between Syria and Iraq? And you ended up chopping up much of the religious history of the region, and now you have the Islamic State trying to rise to fill that void and kind of re-seize its claim of an extreme form of Sharia law, restore a caliphate that represents the glory days of Islam, and they're trying to get back what they lost. Would you say that's probably the number one story in the world this year?
Absolutely. The only question I have there is that last point that you mentioned, the very vocal attempt to restore a caliphate. And really, I think they have designs upon a worldwide caliphate, although it's delusional. Yeah. Is that being sufficiently emphasized in all the hundreds, thousands of stories that are being written every day about what they're up to every day?
No, I don't think it is. In fact, most journalists feel uncomfortable covering Muslim law, Sharia law. And then in reality, though, of course, there are multiple different approaches to Sharia law. I mean, obviously, let's take Pakistan. Pakistan has Sharia law, yet we also have the Taliban arguing that its form of Sharia law isn't religious enough. I mean, arguing that, you know, they have blasphemy laws in Pakistan, where infamously we've had, you know, Christian converts and other people almost sentenced to death, but almost executed in Pakistan. Yet the Taliban in Pakistan is murdering people, blowing up schools, and everything else because Sharia law isn't radical enough. So at Get Religion, we argue all the time that if the press wants Americans to understand the complexity of Islam, who's going to have to tell us about it? Who's going to have to admit that these complexities exist and kind of walk the public through what this looks like on the ground? I mean, if there's more than one form of Sharia, someone's going to have to tell us how that affects young girls in Pakistan, how that affects minority forms of Islam in Iraq, how that affects ancient Christian communities in Syria and Iraq that are being destroyed. I mean, how that affects the fact that one of the groups in Syria that America actually considers kind of moderate in comparison, of course, to the Islamic State, is actually the group that has kidnapped and is holding hostage two Orthodox bishops, including the brother of the Patriarch of Damascus. Yet they're moderate. So moderate on what? Moderate in comparison to what? Where someone's going to have to explain all this to us. And even though everybody covers the Islamic State, and even though everybody knows that was the most important story of the year, you're right in raising the question of whether or not we're being told enough about it to understand why people would want to join. Why would young Americans try to sneak away from their parents, who are, from all appearances, loyal and faithful Muslims? Why would they want to try to sneak out of Chicago and fly to the Middle East to join the Islamic State? We wrote about this recently at Get Religion. They said why. They said it is the duty of every good, faithful Muslim to live in a faithful Muslim government state, by which means we're back to the caliphate, we're back to extreme forms of theocracy and Sharia. And that's why these three American teenagers tried to fly to the Middle East. And they got caught, you know, at the airport. But this is this story is not going to go away. That we're dealing with people whose attention spans is measured in the decades and the centuries, whereas Americans, you know, we're pretty much ready to move on to the NFL playoffs.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking on this Monday afternoon, December the 29th, about the top religion stories of 2014. Well, we do need to move on to story number two, the so-called Hobby Lobby case. What was it really about? What were the real religious issues there needing to be covered? And did it deserve to be number two? We'll answer all those questions with Terry Mattingly right after this.
The world celebrates its Christmas because its Christ was born and wrapped in swaddling clothes and laid in a manger.
The Church's Christmas, a Christmas sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin.
The Church celebrates her Christmas because the true Christ was crucified and wrapped in burial cloths and laid in the tomb.
For any size year-end donation, we'll send you an audio link of this sermon and an Advent sermon preached by Todd. Donate online at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. Please include your email address in the memo line. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of Issues Etc. when you consider your year-end giving. IssuesETC.org or Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois 62234, and write your email address in the memo line of your check.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Fall is here, and it's time to toss your boots and pack your suits to escape the chill of winter. Opening its doors this December in Mexico, Hyatt Ziva is the perfect repose for all-inclusive splendor. With 9 restaurants, bars, and lounges to choose from each day, and sumptuous suites to retreat to each night, Hyatt Ziva is the only one in the region with a secluded beach. And for a limited time, you can enjoy a discount as part of their grand opening celebration. Call your travel agent or visit all-inclusive.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the traditional Lutheran preaching, liturgy, and hymnody continue to deliver Christ crucified for sinners today. The Reformation attempted to return the church's focus on what we do for God back to a focus on what God does for us, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures. Some things never change. The gospel is still under attack from inside and outside the church. To see how Lutheran doctrine and practice preserve the gospel, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. on this Monday afternoon, December the 29th, as the year winds down. We're going through the top religion stories of 2014 with Terry Mattingly of the On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, let's talk a little bit about number two, the so-called Hobby Lobby case before the U.S. Supreme Court. Did it deserve to be number two? And if so, why?
Yeah, I think so. That's this year's most visible conflict over religious liberty. And, of course, the Supreme Court is the politically relevant institution at which you would want to cover it. I mean, you wouldn't want to actually go out and cover the stories before they reach the court, now would you? So, I think that definitely is number two, especially since it's linked to the ongoing battles about Obamacare. And apparently there are some pretty complex views inside the court. I think one of the big stories that we're missing right now is whether or not there are any people on the Supreme Court that are true old-fashioned First Amendment liberals. We've discussed this before, haven't we, that one of the things I'm wrestling with is the definition of the term liberal and progressive in our society today. And the way I've worded it in previous podcasts, you may recall, is I keep asking the questions, what do you call someone who is a weak defender of free speech, a weak defender of freedom of association, and a weak defender of religious liberty? And I don't know what the word is that describes such a person, but in the history of American political thought, it is inaccurate to call them a liberal. So what I'm wondering is, within the court, when this comes up, when the Little Sisters of the Poor actually get their decision out of the Supreme Court, how many people are on the court that actually still are liberal? I mean, in the sense that they want to defend the rights of religious groups even when they don't fit in with mainstream America. Liberals used to be the people that defended the rights of neo-Nazis to march through heavily Jewish suburbs containing, you know, large groups of Holocaust survivors. I'm thinking back a couple of decades now to a famous case in Skokie, Illinois. And liberals fought for the rights of neo-Nazis to do that because the First Amendment applies to everybody. That used to be liberalism. We're way, way past that today in terms of whether or not religious minorities, such as practicing Christians, have any right to free speech, freedom of association, and religious liberty in America today.
Now, the particular religious issue, if you had to say the Hobby Lobby case and all of the little satellite cases that have been orbiting around it, various nuances on how religious liberty and the Affordable Care Act have been bumping up against each other in the courts,
yeah.
What is the angle that must be understood there?
Well, Hobby Lobby was an interesting case in that it was linked to that, I mean, ironically, back to the campaign financing issue of whether a corporation has rights or whether a corporation is a person. The Hobby Lobby case was the angle in the Obamacare fight in which many people were most divided. People didn't really know if a for-profit company could make a claim for religious exemption, even though there had been attempts under legislation back in the Clinton era to make sure that they would be. I really was uncertain about that. I wasn't sure how the court would rule. The fascinating angle to me is, what do you do with clearly doctrinally defined religious organizations that aren't simply dedicated to worship or religious education only for believers? In other words, right now we have like three levels of this, and it's the one in the middle that I'm not sure the press understands. The Obama administration wants to make sure that everybody knows they're not going to force churches to do things that churches don't want to do, at which point it seems that religious liberty affects free speech, freedom of association, religious liberty inside the doors of churches and clearly evangelistic and or religious institutions. The problem is, what happens when you have an institution that bumps into the public? What happens when you have a clearly doctrinally defined religious ministry that doesn't care whether you're a Christian or not? They're going to, in the words of Cardinal Dolan, the Little Sisters of the Poor and other Catholic organizations don't just serve Catholics. They serve everybody because the people who are running the organization are Catholic. Does that make sense? Their doctrine says serve everybody. But that's exactly where this story gets interesting, because those are the groups that the government is now trying to say, well, maybe they're not religious enough to get a religious exemption to Obamacare. Maybe they're not religious enough to be able to make full claims of religious liberty. And, of course, this gets into Christian colleges and universities. This gets into parachurch groups. This gets into Catholic hospitals. This gets into social ministries. And most famously, the standard bearers for this is this little Catholic order, the Little Sisters of the Poor, who their whole ministry is to people who are impoverished or elderly or handicapped or homebound. They do nothing but serve the weakest of the weak. And right now the government's position is that they have to cooperate with the government in providing contraceptions and abortifacients and sterilization and everything else to members of their own staff, even though providing those services directly or indirectly violates the Catholic faith that the staff have agreed to uphold. For Protestant listeners, this would be like a Missouri Synod Lutheran University having a doctrinal covenant that forbade certain forms of contraception. Now, we're having to go out here because I don't know where the Missouri Synod Lutherans stand on all this, but would they still oppose morning after pills?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so this is a Missouri Synod Lutheran University having to include morning after pills in the health care of its staff and student body and faculty, even though those people have signed of their own free volition lifestyle covenants not to do that. So the government at that point is requiring Missouri Synod Lutherans to fund opposition to their own doctrines. That's a remarkable story. And that's the middle that the press isn't getting a hold of. They've got churches down, and to some degree we have a Hobby Lobby ruling down now. But the really pernicious problem is, if I use that word correctly, is in the middle. What religious ministries are not religious enough to get religious liberty? That's a tremendous question. And why does the government all of a sudden get to define what is religious enough? And why does the government all of a sudden get to define when doctrines apply and when they don't inside of voluntary religious associations? Fascinating stuff. And we haven't even... Maybe we'll get that this year. Maybe the court will give us that decision this year, at which point the press will kind of be pushed to cover it.
We're going through the top religion stories of 2014. When we come back, it'll be story number three, which is actually two stories, a tie between two stories. Neither of them seem to me to be big news stories. One, the continued unrest in the Middle East, and the other one, Pope Francis doing what Pope Francis usually does. Terry Mattingly is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
Yes, there is a Messiah in Seattle. Messiah Lutheran Church and Concordia Lutheran School have served North Seattle for over 60 years, and we invite you to join us on Sunday mornings at 8 and 10:45 with Bible study at 9:20. Messiah Seattle is proud to support Issues, etc. To learn more, watch our adult information class videos online or on DVD. Our website is messiahseattle.org, 206-524-0024.
If any of you are looking for any last-minute gift ideas for me, I'd like Frank Shirley, my boss, right here tonight.
With a big ribbon on his head. And I want to look him straight in the eye, and I want to tell him what a cheap, lying...
Tired of the unbiblical removal of pastors from the office of the ministry and ecclesiastical supervisors doing nothing about it? Register today at acelc.net for our next conference, February 10th through 12th in Kansas City, Missouri. Don't just rant about it. Find out what you can do at acelc.net.
Organist Service, aptly abbreviated SOS, really has come to our rescue.
Pastor Jim Hollowatch of Christ Lutheran Church in Jackson, Mississippi.
With the ever-growing shortage of skilled musicians in our community, we were approaching a real crisis. But thanks to the Substitute Organist Service, help is always just minutes away. With its easy, intuitive interface, friendly customer service, and outstanding musicianship, you really couldn't ask for more.
You can find out more about the Substitute Organist Service at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Ernst Heating and Cooling is a third-generation, family-owned company and has been serving the Metro East for decades. Ernst is a Lennox and GeoComfort geothermal dealer and services all makes and models of heating and cooling systems. Now is the time for your heating system checkup. Whether it's service or maintenance for your existing heating or cooling system or a whole new system, you need to call Ernst Heating and Cooling. Call them at 618-633-2244 or ErnstHeating.com. Ernst Heating and Cooling, Hamel, Illinois.
Are you concerned about weight gain during the holidays? Work out this winter at Arch Fitness of Cottage Hills, Illinois. Arch Fitness offers adult boot camps on weekday evenings and on weekday and Saturday mornings. For more information, check out the Facebook fan page for Arch Fitness or call Kevin Reisick at 618-670-6952. Arch Fitness is located at 127 West MacArthur Drive in Cottage Hills, Illinois. Win the war against winter weight. Arch Fitness of Cottage Hills, Illinois.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Terry Mattingly is with us. We're talking about the top religion stories of 2014 on this Monday afternoon, December the 29th. In Hour 2 of Issues Etc., we're going to study the Christmas hymn, All My Heart This Night Rejoices. Pastor Peter Bender will join us. He is director of the Concordia Catechetical Academy in Sussex, Wisconsin. Terry, we come to number three, which is a tie between two stories, continued unrest in the Middle East, I suppose. That's how we talk about it. And then Pope Francis, being Pope Francis?
Yeah, he is who he is. But back to that first one, the element of what's happening in the Middle East that I'm not sure we're getting explained very well is the Temple Mount itself. Now, I have seen one or two stories in elite media that do a pretty decent job of noting that the Temple Mount is in this story somewhere. But it seems like, once again, we would much rather cover this as a political conflict between two groups of people than really let the American public know much about the religious symbolism, the religious doctrines, the competing eschatologies that are involved in this battle over the Temple Mount. And that's the part of the story that's not getting explained really well. Back to the Pope, the whole issue with the Pope, and this is beginning to get very intriguing on the conservative side of the Catholic fence. We've written about this at Get Religion a lot, including a think piece that I put up over the weekend referencing a work by the conservative Catholic thinker George Weigel. And that is the problem Pope Francis, if you're a conservative Catholic, or is the problem that the press won't cover everything that Pope Francis says. In other words, if you're mad at some of the things the Pope is being quoted as saying, and he is saying these things, the problem is that that's not all he's saying. You're hearing one soundbite out of a sea of information that when you look at the whole picture, the Pope is, you know, a pastorally minded but pretty traditional Roman Catholic, especially on issues of marriage and family and abortion and all the hot-button topics, including, quite frankly, homosexuality. But when you look at the individual soundbite yanked out of context, the press honestly seems to think that this Pope isn't Catholic, which I guess from the viewpoint of a lot of journalists is a good thing. But when you then look at all the other addresses he's making that they're not covering, this infinitely more complex picture of the Pope emerges. And my favorite example is one of the quotes that has hovered over his whole career is the quote where he says, we can't just talk about abortion and sex and whatever else, or people will stop listening to us. I'm paraphrasing loosely, but that's a famous quote. I'm sure you've seen it. And yet nobody seems to notice that the day after that story broke and everybody was harping on that quote, the Pope spoke at a national conference in Italy on abortion and made remarks about abortion that were stronger than the language that would have been used by Pope John Paul II or Benedict XVI. I mean, the man does have a blunt tongue when it comes time to speak. And another story that's fascinating that Weigel pointed out, this man talks about Satan and the devil and incarnate evil in our world. He talks about it all the time. How often have you read a story on what Pope Francis has to say about sin, evil, and Satan?
I don't think I've seen one.
Well, that's kind of the point. Yet it's clearly one of the major themes in his talking about anything. In fact, my column was just went out on the poll of the top 10 events of the year, opened with a quote where he looked forward. This was a quote before 2004. This was soon after he became Pope. And he looked ahead kind of into the future toward the Middle East, and he said, what we're really dealing here is a battle with the evil one. And the way things are going, we would have to see this as a sign of the end times. Now, did you read that story?
No.
Okay, well, that's pretty strong stuff. And he happened to be right. I mean, what has the whole last year been about, if not the crushing of religious minorities in the region occupied by the Islamic State? I mean, so the Pope got it right. You know, looking ahead to 2014, he called it. And so this year, that's number one story, and he was Newsmaker of the Year for the second straight year as the Francis effect rolls on. So the issue is not whether Pope Francis is getting too much coverage. The issue is whether a few statements by Pope Francis are getting too much coverage in comparison to the whole broader message of what this man is having to say.
The fourth story in the list is, in my way of thinking, and perhaps you disagree, the least newsworthy, not because it isn't an event, but because it was bound to happen and anyone paying attention could have predicted it. Mainline Protestantism moving officially more toward the acceptance of homosexual clergy and marriage.
Well, this is where I'd like to point out one thing about the list, and this is true year after year in the RNA poll. And I remember when I was voting on it, I often wondered, why is this? There is almost no evangelicalism in this poll. I mean, if you're looking for events in the world of evangelical, charismatic, and Pentecostal Christians, and Pentecostal Christians in particular, it's the fastest growing segment of Christianity on planet Earth. Yet there's almost nothing in this poll that has anything to do with the world of growing Christianity other than Catholicism. And yet, liberal mainline Protestantism, the fastest declining churches in American life, are in the poll over and over. And I don't know what that has to do with the possible exception that if you were looking for churches that hold positions on hot-button issues that journalists like, that would tend to be, statistically speaking, the mainline Protestant churches. And so thus, whatever they do is considered news because it's on topics that journalists automatically think are news. There has been a top 10 event related to liberal Protestants and their actions on same-sex marriage and the ordination of non-celibate gay and lesbian clergy. There has been an item related to that probably in the RNA poll every year for roughly 20 years. It's just the annual item in the poll, and you just get to see how high it goes. I thought 4 was way too high for this year.
Ebola is the other big story that's going to make everybody's list. It comes in at 5, and its religion angle is that faith-based organizations are responding as faith-based organizations often do in the face of such kind of a health crisis.
Yeah, and see, Ebola for me might have been number 3 in terms of the uniqueness of that story this year. And it seemed like every time you turned around in an Ebola case, you had a religion angle. Because these are the people who are willing to go into these zones and risk their lives to take care of hurting people. Those are often people who are going there statistically, again. I'm not saying there are not secular people who are risking their lives on behalf of people with Ebola. I'm just saying that statistically, there's a very high percentage of people who go into these sorts of ministries for religious reasons and religious motivations. How many times did you read a story about these brave, courageous people fighting Ebola, and then like two-thirds of the way in it, there's a scene where they're out in the hall praying together and singing a hymn or something like that? And if that's their actual reason for being there, if that's their motivation for risking their lives, I say put that higher in the story. And in this case, I certainly would have put it higher in the poll.
So of the bottom 5 that made the 10, do you think any others deserved a higher ranking?
Well, frankly, I would have put Ferguson and the role of religion in all of the discussions of the Brown case in Ferguson, Missouri. I would have put that higher than immigration reform, especially now the executive action was a huge political story this year. I'm not sure the religion angle of that was more powerful than all of the events that unfolded in Pakistan, for example, this year, or Ferguson. The number 9, way down the list, we have another one of those annual mainland Protestant stories. In this case, it's the Church of England doing what they've been trying to do for about 20 years, which is to allow women in the episcopate. That's a very predictable story. I guess it deserved to be in the top 10, and maybe 9 is about where it belongs. But I was surprised out of those that Ferguson wasn't higher. When you consider the amount of coverage Ferguson got and the degree to which it was like the Ebola story. Every time you turned around, the Ferguson story had a religion angle that just kept showing up. And I also thought, frankly, that one of the most fascinating stories of the year was the degree to which evangelical Protestants, led by the leadership of the Southern Baptist Convention and the Assemblies of God, it must be said, began to seriously make noise in their calls for racial justice in this country, and including their questioning of some of the structures of power related to police, etc., which is not the same thing as believing Darren Wilson should have been indicted, but it was a tremendous show of sympathy and attempts to understand what was going on in the black community. I thought that was one of the more overlooked stories of the year, and it might have deserved some sort of mention in the RNA polls.
When we come back, more with Terry Mattingly. We're talking about the top religion stories of 2014. Now, he did mention Ferguson, and I have a question about that Ferguson story, whether there's a religion angle there. We have to tread lightly here, but usually religious leaders in a community try and bring more peace, and stories of late have laid a lot of the responsibility for continued violence at the footsteps of well, some prominent religious leaders, some famous celebrity religious leaders. We'll talk about that with Terry Mattingly right after this.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.
No matter the size, big or small, RP Lumber can deliver it all. From pickups to one-tons to box trucks and booms. Everywhere you look, you see blue. RP Blue. RP prides itself in customer service. RP will deliver quality products to your home, business, or job site. And you can be sure of timely delivery on clean trucks with courteous drivers. So when you think of service, think blue. RP Blue. With over 50 local community locations, for 37 years, RP Lumber.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you recently graduated from high school or college and are still making up your mind about your future career? Here's an opportunity to serve your neighbor through an extended, uniquely Lutheran service program. It's called the Lutheran Youth Corps. Find out more about the Lutheran Youth Corps at lcms.org/youthcorps. Life together through witness and mercy, the Lutheran Youth Corps, lcms.org/youthcorps.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House. Listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House. cph.org.
In the next hour of Issues Etc., we're going to study the Christmas hymn, All My Heart This Night Rejoices. Pastor Peter Bender will be our guest. In the meantime, we're going through the top religion stories with Terry Mattingly of 2014. Now, Terry, you mentioned something before the break, the Ferguson story, and I have a question there, really just seeking advice, and I want to tread lightly here. There's a religious angle there, and I think it has to do with religious leaders where the model has been before kind of Martin Luther King Jr. trying to bring peace to a volatile situation. And of late, his self-appointed successors have kind of been pushing the opposite direction. What are your thoughts there?
Well, maybe I'm going to skate really close to the edge of the ice here. But you know that famous definition of a celebrity in America is that a celebrity is someone who's famous for being famous? I mean, like, other than certain pieces of photography ending up on the internet, what do the Kardashians do? I mean, you know, what do they do for a living other than be Kardashians? Now, my comparison there is, why is Sharpton considered such an overwhelming voice for African Americans in this country? In comparison, for example, related to the Ferguson case, to the actual clergy who are on the ground in the orange shirts, out there on the front line, organizing peaceful demonstrations, trying to organize dialogue, the Catholics who are joining them, the Jews who are joining them, the Muslims who are joining them, why aren't those people the dominant voices, especially when it gets to the level of cable television? Instead of some of these people that I consider, frankly, religious celebrities who are primarily famous just for being famous. It's easy to aim a mic at a kind of a usual suspect. You know that wonderful moment in Casablanca at the end when he says, round up the usual suspects? That's frankly what cable TV does with a lot of these subjects. They have, like, the usual suspects either on contract or on speed dial, and they just talk to the same people over and over and over when there are way more interesting people on the ground. The New York cases, I just put a post up at Get Religion, which I would urge listeners to go check out. I just put a post up about the religion angles that are emerging now linked to the funerals of the two officers who died. And in the Religion News Service morning newsletter noted that had a story from NBC noting that Ramos, the officer, the Latino officer, or Puerto Rican, I should say, officer who died, was 1 hour away from the ceremony in which he was going to be made a police chaplain. At the moment of his death, he was 1 hour away from the ceremony that was going to raise him to the status of chaplain. That's just really a very poignant angle. And it also raises another thing. I mean, even though he's Puerto Rican, he's not Roman Catholic. When you look at the website of his church, it appears that what we're dealing with here is with a pretty typical evangelical slash charismatic or Pentecostal congregation, of which, of course, there are millions of Latinos now converting to evangelical forms of Protestantism or Pentecostal even more. This raises a really interesting issue in the current tensions. Does the mayor of New York want to go to a Pentecostal church for the funeral? I'm not sure what would happen under those circumstances. I'm not sure what a Pentecostal pastor might feel inspired to say, you know, in the current situations, facing the death of one of his most prominent parishioners. That could be a story that listeners may want to pay attention to just in the days ahead. I think the funerals for those two officers in New York are going to be very interesting in different ways. One was a devout evangelical believer, and the other was a secular person who, as the New York Times said, did his praying at home. So what we have here is maybe a symbol for the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, one of the biggest religious trends of the last 2 years, and a symbol for another huge global trend, which is the Latino, the emerging world of Latino charismatic Protestantism. Worth watching.
Terry, there are several other stories that didn't make the list, and I don't know that they should have made the list, but I do want your thoughts on how they were covered in the course of this last year. I imagine, and I'll take them in no particular order, Boko Haram in Nigeria.
Yeah. Well, we're back to trying to understand the differences within Islam. In northern Nigeria, in the dominantly Muslim half of the country, there are at least four different levels of Islam that are affecting coverage of this story. You have Boko Haram. You have some people, including those in state power, who actually are sympathetic to Boko Haram. Maybe they're not a part of it, but they're sympathetic to that appeal for the caliphate and that appeal for that form of Sharia law. So they, even though they're in government power, they don't do anything. Then you have another form of Islam, which is the people who disagree with Boko Haram, but they're scared to do anything about it. So that's another layer. And then finally, you have the Muslims who openly oppose Boko Haram. They support education that includes contact with Christians, and they don't support forms of Sharia that go that far. And these, of course, are the Muslims who are being massacred by Boko Haram. So that's the same story, isn't it? The layers of Islam and our struggle to understand them and our struggle to have a press that covers kind of what the practical, I keep using the word doctrinal, differences are between those different types of Muslims. I don't think that complexity comes across in our papers.
The precipitous fall of megachurch pastor Mark Driscoll.
Yeah. Well, that's a huge story at Christianity Today and World. I don't think that should have been in the top 10. There is a large story, though, there, which is that the whole world of independent megachurch evangelical charismatic Christianity is such a loose cannon in American life. There's almost no way to supervise non-denominational Christianity. There are no legal structures there to tap into. I mean, if you have a pastor who is involved in, say, a sexual abuse situation, and they're in an independent evangelical or independent Baptist congregation, and you're the victim, who do you sue? I mean, who has oversight for the actions of that pastor or youth director or whoever? And the answer is pretty much nobody. So there's a huge story there, but this one doesn't particularly fascinate me, and I certainly didn't think that would have been in the top 10.
The first time a Mormon officialdom comes clean on Joseph Smith's polygamy and the nature of it.
Yeah, the way that was worded in the RNA poll was fascinating, and I think accurate. It said that to some degree we're watching the leadership of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints kind of coming to terms with the Internet and saying that if all of this information from our critics is out there, if all of this information from scholars is out there, if all of this information from former Mormons is out there, at some point we might want to decide what we can go ahead and own up to. Probably more significant than the story about Joseph Smith was the discussion of whether or not Mormons still believe in exaltation, you know, and the belief that you can evolve to a godlike status where, to put it in popular terms, do you get your own planet? And some people literally say they put that statement out because of the Book of Mormon, you know, on Broadway, you know, and all the different versions of that blunt, scatological, you know, musical. But to some degree, that is a real story, which is the Mormon Church kind of having to deal with an era in which its people cannot be walled off as easily from the information of their critics. I frankly thought that doctrinal story about heaven and hell and salvation and the life to come and all that, I thought that was more interesting than the Joseph Smith story. But hey, you know, 40 wives, that's a great headline.
This is one that probably is more niche, kind of in the evangelical ghetto, so to speak, not meaning that in a derogatory way. It's just the way things are. Bill Gothard, who has been massively influential in the heart of evangelicalism, discovered to have some minor dalliances, I don't know what else to call them, with young employees over many years.
Well, I don't consider them minor. But see, don't you see that that's the same story we were just talking about earlier? Where we're dealing with kind of like this powerful evangelical figure, and who does he answer to? His board. Who picked his board? Him. Who has authority over Bill Gothard? Who's his bishop? You know, who's his pope? Who's his convention, like the Southern Baptist Convention? What is the structure that is over that evangelical leader? And the answer is Zippo. So to some degree, that's the same story, isn't it?
Then finally, what do you think will be the top religion story of 2015, Terry?
I still am looking at the Islamic State. You know, if we have some major act of terrorism in the West and the Islamic State finally begins to follow through on its threats with targets in Europe or America or wherever, you think that would be the top story of the year? Of course it would. At the same time, we have a Supreme Court decision, you know, coming on issues related to same-sex marriage. We have court decisions related to other aspects of religious liberty. So when in doubt, flip a coin between the religious liberty battles and the Islamic State battles. Both of which have to do with religious freedom, but in completely different spheres and totally different ways. Could there be a wild card? Could something, you know, with the upcoming presidential election, go ahead and jump in there? Maybe, but I'd still look at those two stories.
Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
Folks, if you appreciate our weekly interviews on media coverage of religion, please consider making a year-end tax-deductible contribution to Issues Etc. You can contribute by check, make your check payable to Issues Etc. Send it to Issues Etc., Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Here's that address again. Issues Etc., Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also make a year-end tax-deductible donation at issuesetc.org, right there online. Thanks for listening, and thanks for keeping us in mind when you consider your year-end giving. In Hour 2 of Issues Etc., we're going to study a great Christmas hymn, All My Heart This Night Rejoices. Pastor Peter Bender of the Concordia Catechetical Academy will be our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin, Hour 2 of Issues Etc. in 5 minutes.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Do you have a hard time finding Christian greeting cards and gifts that aren't either sappy or theologically suspect? Ad Crucem offers the perfect combination of art and the truth of the Scriptures with beautiful and reverent greeting cards and gifts. Deliver the true comfort of the gospel, Christ crucified for sinners, to family and friends with Ad Crucem. ADCRUCEM.com. Confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com.
Hello, this is Pastor Kevin Golden of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The saints at Village Lutheran are proud to be part of the Issues Etc. 300, sharing in their Christ-centered, cross-focused proclamation of the gospel. If you find yourself in St. Louis, join us on Sundays at 8:15 and 10:45 for the Divine Service, 9:30 for Bible study and Sunday school, as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. Or visit us on the web at www.villagelutheranchurch.org.